Yeah, it's Pulse with the sports. You don't need another report. Bleed and green till I D-I-E. Hold it down for the best team. We in first place, we the Celtics. Try to shoot it, we ain't let ya. Finna go and win a ring. Giving fades like I'm Kyrie. You the opposition, can't score yet. Homie, you ain't even on the floor yet. Big buckets and big shots. Better check the time on the shot clock. Got my shooters on me, they wet you up. It's a 30-footer, I ain't letting up. Scary Terry with the dancing bear. Gonna light it up like it ain't fair. Dunk it on you like Rozier. Fourth quarter, we in fifth gear. I got Tatum, I got Brown. I got Marcus locking you down. Grab a broom, it's a sweep. Score 100 on our feet. Celtics Pulse, we the team. And we don't accept defeat, yeah.
Welcome back to another episode of the Celtics Pulse podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Be sure to check out the rest of the great pods that are part of the network, slowly filling out NBA, NFL, and MLB coverage with all good, high-quality guys that are putting out content regularly. And you can find all of those at PulsePodcastNetwork.com. And this episode is brought to you by Thrive Fantasy, a new prop betting app that we've had many people say they enjoy. If you use the promo code PULSE, they will double your first deposit. And the other sponsor for this episode is Tix Blitz, like a football blitz at the end there. And same promo code, use PULSE to get a percentage off of your first purchase for any sort of game, event, anything you're trying to go to in Boston, anywhere really. Be sure to check out Tix Blitz.
Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With Tix Blitz, the price you see is the price you pay. And Tix Blitz just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixBlitz.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixBlitz.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixBlitz. That's TixBlitz.com, TixBlitz.com. Every ticket, every venue.
And today on this episode, it is myself, Brendan, and Cody. How are you doing today, man?
I am doing quite well, Brendan. How are you?
Can't complain, man. Going through some wins right now with this Boston team.
You really are, and there's no complaining on my end either. I mean, wins are wins. I don't care how we get them, who we get them against. Wins are wins, and we're doing it big.
Exactly. Can't complain. You want to start with the Sacramento game, I believe, is the last one that we have not touched on.
Yeah, let us talk about the Sacramento game, which happened on Thursday night.
Yes.
I caught a little bit of the game at the end. I was traveling from school back home as spring break has just started for me. So we got 120-126 win for the Celtics. Just looking at the pure box score, Buddy Hield had himself a night with almost 35, 7
as
assists
usual.
As well. As usual, he's been quite good. De'Aaron Fox almost had a triple-double with 19, 9, and 7. Marvin Bagley, who's been playing extremely well after the All-Star break, was hurt for a little bit and now is back in the lineup. He played about 20 minutes and got 14 points. And if you look at the Celtics side, they took care of business. Kyrie with a triple-double, 31, 12, and 10. Al Horford with his usual 12, 6, and 5. Jason Tatum with the headband got 15. Marcus Morris Sr. the last couple of games has looked really, really well. 12 and 13 rebounds. And Jaylen Brown off the bench has been looking phenomenal with 22 points in this one. Celtics have been on a little bit of a roll. Coming out of California with a 3-1 road record in that trip with wins against the Lakers, wins against Sacramento, I believe, and wins against the Golden State Warriors. So they went into California, did business, came back home, and they're continuing that stretch. And it was a really, really good game by the Celtics.
Yeah, and this was the Kyrie Irving triple-double, which was somehow only the second of his career, a 30-point triple-double.
And it was a comeback win, too. If you look at the beginning of the game, it was 38-25 after the first quarter in favor of Sacramento. I remember I was looking at the Celtics Twitter page. I'm like, oh, well, this is one of those games, again, where everyone's going to blow up and say the Celtics can't even make it past the first round.
Yeah.
And then as the game went on, it was just the Celtics controlled. And defensively lately, it's as we'll get touched that in just a moment, the Celtics haven't looked great defensively, but they held Kings to under 30 points in each of the last three quarters. So they buckled down, and they had a fantastic third quarter when they put up almost 40 themselves. And, they got hot in that second quarter, and they just kept it out from there.
Yeah, and really going down 13 in that first quarter, like you touched on a little bit, I mean, it's hard to come back after that. You heard Marcus in the post game of the Atlanta game today say he got asked what was different, and we'll touch on that Atlanta game in a little bit. And he said the Sacramento game, they just weren't prepared enough. And, kind of understandable. They only see that Sacramento team twice a year, and it was the first game back from a long road trip. I'm sure the last thing they wanted to do on that 8-hour plane ride or whatever it is watch a bunch of film on Sacramento. And Sacramento's a young team. They run their ass off. I think they're first in pace this year right now. And that it's a difficult Sacramento team. But then they started to buckle down, played some good defense, like you said, and started to get that lead in the fourth quarter, and then never really looked back. I mean, I was happy with it. The crazy thing in this game, there was a combined 124 points in the paint from both teams. It was bad defense at times, interior for the Celtics, but worse for the Kings. And it was practically even, 60 on Sacramento's side, 64 on Boston. But this game and the Atlanta game, there was no rim protector down low. So it felt like Kyrie, Jaylen, even Al could do his little post hook. You could see both Marcuses get down there. They were just able to get to the paint and finish there whenever they wanted.
Yeah, and that's obviously something, as the NBA has progressed in the last few years, you don't really use – it's not necessarily that you don't use the post. You never use the mid-range game, but I feel like the post positioning and post presence is something that's even going undervalued in today's game. Where, everyone's a shooter, and that's what you want. But at the same time, you need that post presence to establish that dominance. That's why everyone needs that paint protector. Because then things like that won't happen, where teams are scoring 60 to 70-plus points in the paint on you at will, which is the easiest place to score.
Horford quietly has an amazing little post hook. His touch is unbelievable.
From 15 and even beyond out, Al is a very, very underrated player in the fact that, he won't score 20, but he easily could.
Yeah.
I feel like he has the offensive game to get around those 18 to 22. I feel like he has LaMarcus Aldridge type potential offensively.
And he's a better defender. LaMarcus
will give, he'll, maybe not like the 25 to 26 points, but he'll give you the 20 to 22. If he did, but what the thing with Al is he's a phenomenal passer, especially for a big man. So that's how we use him. We use him to facilitate a lot of the offense.
Yeah, he's really probably been our most consistent guy this year. I know he struggled a bit at first, and at the beginning of the year, maybe first quarter, that really went to Marcus Morris. He's fallen off pretty hard. It seems like he got his shot back a little bit, but Al has been doing it all. He's always been our defensive anchor. He's the dad of the team. He's clearly the veteran, and he's really not that old. I mean, I wouldn't call him young either, but it's not like a Vince Carter veteran.
Yeah. Al's been one of the most consistent players in the NBA for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Look at him at Atlanta. He was always an 18, 20, and 10 guy. That's what he was. He played great defense. That's what he was. He was the Al Horford we get now is a little bit. It was still a watered down Al Horford from when he was in his prime in Atlanta. But the game is still the same. All we are doing is running him more. Because the game just changed, where now he is an offensive facilitator instead of an offensive weapon.
Yeah,
that's the only thing that's really changed about Al. He's always been sneaky athletic and sneaky. Guard outside. He's always done a decent job in protecting the paint, where he's not the best player, but he's getting a block a game, a block and a half, in his time here in Boston. And the rebounding numbers are a little bit down. That's just how the way the game's going with the spacing. And he's not that great a rebounder anyway. But Al Horford's been one of the most, like him, like Marcus Saul, like those are the players who I think just consistent. Like they will give you what they will give you. DeAndre Jordan, or it might not be the flashiest numbers, but they'll never not, they will always give you their guaranteed numbers.
Yeah, the type of guys that you know what you're going to get from them game in and game out.
Yeah.
And Al's the definition of that. I don't think Al gets enough credit for IT's amazing season. I think that he was really able to open up the floor for Isaiah, that those pick and rolls were just insane.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and Scal talks about it all the time, that he's like, Kyrie and Al, this two-man game is unstoppable. You can go to that whenever you want and get a bucket from either side. And it's not even, it's so versatile for both of them. Obviously, Kyrie can score however he wants, wherever he wants. Al kind of feels like the same thing. Like, he can pick and pop, and his three is extremely reliable. Like we've talked about, he's got that post down low. He can cut hard, roll hard off those screens. He can be the ball handler in a dribble handoff. Like, the versatility in that pick and roll is just, I don't understand how you would game plan against it.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely difficult to game plan. I mean, my favorite play in the Isaiah Thomas days were, you know, the Allen Isaiah screen up top, and then a Jaylen Brown backdoor cut where Al would just lob it up to him. I mean, it's not that. It's like I said, like the pick and roll, how simple it is. It's just so hard to defend, especially with the athletes in the NBA and the ball handling and the skill of the current NBA today possesses. And, you know, like you said, Al can shoot from anywhere from 23 feet in. Kyrie can shoot from anywhere from 45 feet in. I mean, both can get to the rim, both can post up, both can do whatever they want within that pick and roll. You know, if you double Kyrie, as an open for Al. If you play too much on Al, Kyrie's going to go right by you every time. If you sag off, both of them are just going to pull up and take a 15-footer and sink it. I mean, there is no game planning against him. That's just the thing. There is no. You just have to just play as hard defense as you can and just hope that they miss a shot.
Yeah. And so we're doing a new segment. Every game, we're going to have a Pulse performer. And I feel like it's a pretty clear pick for this game, but I wonder. I want to hear what your opinion is. Who you got?
I mean, the easy choice is obviously Kyrie Irving. I mean, 31, 12, 10, facilitated that comeback. I mean, that's the only really option. If you wanted to get cute and fancy, you can go Jaylen Brown, who had 22 off the bench, or you could go Marcus Morris, who had a good game with his 21-13, especially the way he's been playing lately. That's a welcome change of pace, but you have to go Kyrie Irving there.
Yeah, I agree. And the crazy thing is Kyrie went 1 of 9 from 3 in that game. And they were open looks. Like, Kyrie easily could have dropped 40-plus in this one.
Like, it's amazing how you have 31, 12, and 10 on an off night.
Yeah, exactly. Just Kyrie things. But you did touch on Jaylen. I want to give a shout-out. Plus minus of 19 for Jaylen. Team high, game high. Like, that's just absurd. His defense been ridiculous. That's my guy. I have loved Jaylen Brown recently. And also, we've been coming at Terry's throat recently, kind of rightfully so within the last couple weeks. But the last few games, Terry seems like he's back a little bit. Maybe he's just hitting his shots, but he doesn't seem too tunnel visioned. Maybe someone talked to him. You know, he could have just been off for a little while, but it's glad to have Terry. I'm glad to have Terry contributing.
Yeah, I'm glad. I mean, prove me wrong, Terry Rozier. I've been probably the biggest, you know, I hate Terry guy on this pod. You know, me and Tim do not enjoy Terry's presence as of late. But prove me wrong. I don't want to be right. I don't want to be right about Terry Rozier and saying that he doesn't play, he can't play on this team because he still thinks he's a starter when he's not. Prove me wrong. And he's been doing a very, very good job at coming back and sort of calming down, I think is the big point. Just him calming down, chilling out for a minute, and actually, like, thinking. instead of just chucking it up brain deadly. But yeah, Terry's been solid this game, this Sacramento game. He had, I think, 6 or 5, something like that. I'm trying to find. Oh, he didn't even play against Sacramento. He played. Yeah. He had a couple points tonight against Atlanta. But yeah, if he comes back and he does well and he continues to do well into the playoffs, I will gladly say I was wrong.
Yeah, hopefully, to be honest. I mean, Brad obviously really likes him. You can't blame him. He proved himself last playoffs. I think he has defensive potential when he wants to and obviously can hit his shots. But on to the Atlanta game. That was an early game this morning. I'm on the West Coast. A freaking 9:30 game is rough. Yeah,
12:30 for us.
Yeah. So, I mean, it felt the same kind of thing as Sacramento, where there was no rim protector, especially at the beginning, where we were just able to get in the paint, score however we wanted down there. John Collins can't play defense, and Trae Young, who's a beast on offense, and that's a great duo, but both of those guys can't play defense.
Yeah, no, it's and especially if you look at this game, like everyone, I came into it knowing like it's a 12:30 game, everyone's tired as shit. There's going to be 415 points scored in this game. And the first quarter was 43-36 Boston. And it was just like whatever shot you took, it was going in. I mean, Kyrie had a couple of threes in the first quarter, and Jason Tatum had a dunk in transition, and Marcus Morris was hitting shots. I don't know if you noticed this, but every time Marcus Morris gets a ball, gets it passed to him in the corner, he'll try to go one-on-one. He won't get anywhere, and then he'll take a step-back three that makes me want to pull my hair out every single time. Every single time. Not like 3 times today.
I noticed it a lot last year. I feel like it got better, but it still happens there. And even on the elbow of the three-point line, it's a much for me. I can't do it. I'd rather have Jalen or Jason or obviously Kyrie, even Al, anybody else in that starting lineup take a contested shot.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing to note, Gordon Hayward only played 1 minute. He got bumped in the head and he had a strained neck.
Poor guy. So
he'll most likely miss next game just because, but I think it's not that big of a deal. It's not serious. It's not like he didn't get concussed or anything, so I feel like they'll probably sit him out against Denver on Monday, tomorrow night, and then have him play against the Sixers on Wednesday.
Yeah, and
that's what their most likely plan is going to be.
Yeah, and like I said, dude, just poor guy. Like, obviously, it's not that bad of an injury, but he wants to see the floor. He's got to get in a rhythm.
Oh, did I tell you that I figured out 100% the origins of Black-Eyed Hayward?
No. Where did this come from?
I figured it out. So while I was watching the game, there was a commercial for Realtor.com featuring Robin and Gordon. And there was this one scene where they're sitting there looking at sort of like an easel, and it had like a plan on it. And Robin had a pointer, one of those like pointers that they use in schools to like knock on the board.
Yeah.
And she was waving that thing at Gordon. Here's my theory, and this is why it's 100% true. If you want to look at my Twitter, I linked the YouTube video to it so you can see it yourself. She hit him in the face because Gordon probably looked at the wrong house and she was like, nope, dink, you're done. 100% that's what happened.
And now he's balling out. All for it.
Now he's balling out.
Yeah.
Now he's balling out. So we need, like I mentioned in the last pod I did, we need the Robin Hayward statue.
Agreed.
She is a symbol for young women everywhere. She really is. I'm calling for it.
Yeah, and we need more black eyes for Gordon. I need one right before the first round of playoffs.
I'll give him my eye, and then he'll have 3 black eyes. I mean,
Cody's going to be missing all your body parts, man.
I will donate legit 98% of my body to any Boston Celtic who needs it.
What's the 2% you're keeping?
You know what? I'll keep my ears. I feel like my ears are a staple of who I am.
Okay. At least you can hear the game.
I can hear the game. Don't touch my eyes. We actually had this conversation earlier. I was over at my uncle's house. We're talking about like LASIK surgery. And basically what they do is that they'll numb you, but they won't knock you out. So you could hear them like singeing. I was like, I'd freak out. Don't touch my eyes. Those are my eyes. So yeah, like my ears and my eyes, like let me have that. Everything else you can pawn off.
There you go. All right. Well, you know what happens. Injury time, come straight to Cody. We got
to
keep you.
I'm telling you, I'm still trying to look for a doctor that will do that without any questions being asked. But anyway, we digress. Gordon's all right. He'll probably just precautionarily be out against Denver tomorrow night or two nights from now. And then
another big Kyrie game. Almost another 30-point triple-double. We talked about it right before we started recording. I don't even see Kyrie get these rebounds. I can think of maybe one or two where I actually registered, okay, Kyrie just got a board.
Yeah, I mean, we were sort of, you know, as we said, we were talking about this before we went on, and we compared to Rondo, in which Rondo obviously was one of the better rebounding guards in NBA history. But when Rondo would get a rebound, he wouldn't push it every single time. Or he'll get a rebound and he'll wait for everyone to clear out and then run the half-court offense. With Kyrie and what's going on now is when you get that rebound, you go. Like you already have like Tatum and Brown and Smart leaking out, and all you have is Al with you side to side, and you just run. You just go. You just figure it out. And that's what Kyrie does. He'll get a rebound, he's gone. And that's why I think a lot of the time we don't really register he has a rebound. By the time we look up after watching the shot, he's already at near midcourt. So we just say, oh, that was an outlet pass. That was just a good pass by Al, because I love Al and Al gets all the credit.
Agreed. I wonder if it is a game plan change at all. Like, obviously it's only two games, but maybe they're deciding that, you know, Al, Jason, all these other guys just focus on boxing out and have Kyrie grab those boards. And then he can run the break himself a little bit. You know, Kyrie can go coast to coast better than anyone else in the league.
Yeah, I was, at school I go to, I broadcast a lot of I do like play by play for a lot of the basketball teams, both men's and women's. And for the women's side, they have, you know, their two best rebounders on paper were both of their guards. And, you know, I said that and it's talked about how like Russell Westbrook and all that, like it's a game changer. Because instead of your traditional 7-footers getting the boards and outlet passing, which takes an extra second, if you just get your point guard the ball as quick as possible, because it's a guard-driven league now, it's not that hard to figure out, you just go. And that it put it on the fast break, and it's immediate, because that's where the NBA is heading. It's layups and threes. The two largest shots and fast breaks are layups and threes. I mean, that's where you easily get layups, dunks, and threes in transition. You know, that's why big men such as Al, such as Jokic, such as Draymond Green, who can push the ball up themselves, DeMarcus Cousins, that's why they're so valuable, because you don't, like, just how point guards are so valuable at getting rebounds and not needing that extra pass. If you're the big man, you can do that. That just adds another player that can streak down down court. So maybe it's a game plan. You know, when I was playing, every rebound was my rebound. I don't give a crap who you are. I'm getting the rebound and I will give you the ball later. So that's just my mentality. Like, that was what my job was. I will get the rebound. Get away from me. I will get the rebound. I will move. I will go through you to get the rebound. That's how my mentality Rodman was. It was legit. Give me the rebound.
Yeah.
But now it's like you see it with Steven Adams all the time. He'll box out two guys and just let Westbrook come in, swoop in, and they're gone.
Yeah.
I feel like it's not much of a game plan change. It is a culture change.
Okay. I'm going to start watching for it a little bit more and see how the guys are reacting on those defensive boards. What do you think of Trae Young? I think that he has obviously a bunch of potential. He's got that deep range shooting, and normally it's not very efficient. It has been more so the last month or two, but it was really good this game. His passing blows me away, though. The fact that it's right and left-handed and the vision, it's ridiculous. But defensively, like we talked about, I mean, he's short out there.
So my whole thought on Trae Young, like when Trae Mania was happening last year in college basketball, I was a little bit skeptical. I mean, I watch a lot of Big 12 basketball. I feel that's a very underrated league to watch. So anyone who watches college basketball, Big 12 basketball is where it's at. But obviously I watched my fair share of Trae Young, and obviously the shooting and the passing. And, I thought his turnover numbers were a little high. Yeah. That's why I really like for a playmaker. Like, other than the passes you make, like, how are your turnovers? And he's been doing pretty good in the league from what I've seen. And I originally saw him as he'll be good. I don't think he would have been that Steph Curry everyone was talking about. But now that like I've watched him, and my friend's a big Trae Young guy, so obviously I hear everything that Trae Young does good. Because I'm a big Luka guy, so we kind of have that little rivalry going. He's played fantastic. He has been absolutely phenomenal in these last 2 months. I mean, he's averaging over 20 points per game in that stretch. I mean, the first month, and it's almost like Jaylen Brown, where the first month or two, it was like, Jesus Christ, what the hell is this guy doing? And then after that, when they kind of settled down and found their footing, it's been go time ever since. And Trae, I'm watching Trae, there are some, like, the sling passes he makes,
oof,
where people don't understand how difficult a cross-court sling pass is when he just takes a dribble and goes straight from the dribble into a pass across his body. That's a hard pass to make. Yeah. That's an extremely difficult pass to make. Not only for someone like me, who's just 6'2" and white and played basketball for a couple of years, that's hard for a professional to make. Those are the eye popping, like, wow, that's a great pass. And his handles are tight, and you know, the long range shooting, he had a couple bombs today. There were a couple that he missed, but he hit a couple bombs. I'm not going to say he's going to be Steph Curry, because that's something that I have to see before I start saying.
It's a crazy bar to meet.
But I'm getting flashes. You know, he might not be the all-NBA first teamer every year, but I feel he'll get all-star votes easily because of popularity. Plus, he's putting up super good numbers. He's on a team that low-key, I mean, the pieces they have are pretty cool, plus they're going to get another wicked good piece in the offseason after the draft. So they could have a nice big three of potentially him, John Collins, and like an RJ or a Cam Reddish, or they might pull the trigger on a Morant or a Zion, depending on where they pick. So they could have another quality developmental guy to go along with Trae Young, who's been playing very, very well and has a lot of upside, on top of John Collins, who I was really high on when he came out of Wake Forest a couple years ago, and who has been phenomenal this season as well. We should give a little more credit to John Collins as well. He's averaging like 18 and 11 or something like that. So,
yeah,
I like Trae. I mean, I shit on Trae for a good amount of time. I wasn't in the hype, but I'll say I'm wrong, and that he's proved me wrong, and he has been doing fantastic as of late.
Yeah, I agree. And then there's also Kevin Huerter, who hasn't, I mean, he's a rookie, and he's shown flashes, at the very least, of being a Klay Thompson light type thing. I know that their general manager in Atlanta, I can't think of the name off the top of my head, worked with getting those Warriors together, and they really have said that they're modeling themselves after the Warriors. You know, the Celtics are modeling to go against the Warriors, and already at that point, the Hawks are trying to be the Warriors. And Trae Young, Kevin Huerter, John Collins is a little different than what they got, but you can tell they like these threes, they move the ball well, and once Trae Young understands NBA defenses and his own team's offense, the passes are just going to go on a whole nother level. He already, like you talked about, gets these backdoor cuts to John Collins, who, I mean, there couldn't be a better duo, really, minus the defense like we talked about. Oh my God, yeah. An amazing passer and someone that can finish above the rim like that. They're so much fun to watch. And
yeah, I mean,
I love that they have Vince there to mentor, who plays 20 minutes a night somehow still. They had a quadruple overtime game where Vince played 40-plus minutes. This dude's insane.
Trae Young got 45 in that game, too.
Yeah, they're no joke. But on the Boston side, we had five guys in double digits. Kyrie, 30.
Yes.
Jaylen, second with 23. Marcus Morris with 19, 18 for Tatum, 16 for Smart. It was, I mean, we just played well. We passed the ball. We only had 30 assists. We had 20 in the first half. I say only. That's an okay amount. But anytime this team is passing the ball and at an elite level, I really don't think there's anybody that can stop us.
No, exactly. I mean, I feel like, and that's the reason why I had such a hard time with Terry this year, because watch every single first quarter basically all year, it's been plus Celtics. You know, except for the game where, you know, against Sacramento, we're down by like 45 after the first quarter. But the majority of the games, they're very, very close or we're ahead. And we're always into the high 20s, low 30s, which is on pace to get 120 points a game. Then Terry comes in, the second unit comes in, and the ball movement just stops. And it's night and day. It's night and day between the starting Celtics and bench Celtics. And when it just comes to rotating the ball, and it just, the ball sticks, and then they go down, and then they can't afford to get the ball moving because they don't have time to get the ball moving. They need to make shots now. That's a lot of the losses the Celtics have are because of that dynamic between the first and the second unit. But when the ball is moving, there might not be a bigger threat in the NBA, Warriors included, when the ball is moving. I don't want to say that. Other than the Warriors, there might not subtract the Warriors because they're the biggest threat no matter what they're doing, how they're doing it, and why they're doing it. But other than them, the Celtics are the biggest threat in the NBA offensively when the ball is moving. When the ball is moving and finding everybody, and it doesn't matter who's scoring, it's just that the Celtics are scoring, that's when we play our best basketball. That's when every team plays their best basketball. That's how the Spurs have been so relevant with some pretty bad teams in the last couple of years. They make the playoffs every year because of that system. I mean, if it works, it works. It's not rocket science. It's just moving the ball around.
Yeah, and just playing good defense. Same thing you see in San Antonio. It hasn't been amazing this year, but you play good defense. I mean, I can't say I'm a Phil Jackson fan, but my favorite quote still is offense wins games, defense wins championships. You see it with this Atlanta team. They can't play defense. They'll win some games with their crazy offense, but they're not going to go anywhere if you can't stop the other team.
Exactly. And that happens to all sports. It's with all sports where every single sport is trending upwards in offense. Every single sport. Baseball, they're scoring more runs. Football, there's more points. Basketball, especially. We're seeing it exponentially. But the teams that win every year, always the defensive teams. Then Super Bowl history, I think there's been like 20 times where the number one ranked offense played the number one ranked defense. And I think the number one ranked defense wins 80% of the time. You know, in baseball, every year, the last few years, it's been home runs and strikeouts. That's what the game is coming to. But the Red Sox just got on base. They were singles, and singles comes base runners, and base runners comes runs, and they were dominating teams all year in the postseason because while everyone was striking out or hitting home runs, they were just dinking and dunking their way to victories. And that's the mold. The Warriors, with all their offense, I mean, the Warriors are kind of a bad example because they have everything. I'm trying to think of a team like the Mavericks. The Mavericks were an insane defensive team when they beat the Heat in 2011.
Yeah.
And that they beat the Heat because of their defense, because Jason Kidd was pressuring the ball, and they had Sean Marion and Tyson Chandler and, you know, the other players they had, which were defensive-oriented. So the defense still wins. I mean, as much as offense is sexier nowadays, it's almost like offense is the college girlfriend that everyone wants, where she's hot, you know, she has beautiful hair, beautiful eyes, a great body. But at the end of the day, we all just want a wife. And that's what the defense is.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it really is what's going to put you on that next level. And that's why, you know, actually, it is a toss-up here for our pulse performer of this game. Obviously, we saw Kyrie get those numbers. But five steals from Marcus, might do it for me there.
I was thinking that as well. Because a lot of the times that Kyrie scored, it was assisted by Marcus. He had 9 assists just like Kyrie did.
Yeah. Still put up 16 points.
Mm-hmm.
You good with that one? I mean, my other name that I would throw in there a little bit was Jaylen. He really sparked that comeback at the end, it felt like, which was sad, by the way, that it had to be a comeback. Like, we really did blow the lead for a little while there. It seemed like they just got lackadaisical. They didn't have the same effort.
Yeah, that happens, though. Like I said, it's a 12:30 game. No one wants 30. But, like I said, it shouldn't really happen, but it did. It's a win at the end of the day. If we lost this game, it would be a different story. If we won that game, it's like, all right, guys, we understand why we lost. We just can't have that.
Yeah, so we going with Marcus?
I'd go with Marcus, yeah. I was about to say Marcus. I mean, obviously, 39-11 is hard to pass up with Kyrie, but watching the game and watching the hustle plays that Marcus makes every night, and he blocked Trae Young. Trae Young just got buoyed by Marcus Smart. That was the funniest thing I've seen in my life.
Yeah, I'm all for it. Totally agree with you on that one. So we got Marcus for the Pulse Performer of the Atlanta-Boston game. And the next game we got coming up on the schedule, before we go into a little bit of some other stuff here, some stats, is this game against Denver, which after our first game in Denver, oh my God, I could not wait until we got to play them again. That was the game where Jamal Murray put 50 on our heads and then shot at the very end to get 50. And Kyrie was pissed. He threw the ball on the stands.
Yeah.
The whole team was pissed after that. And part of it is because you played a bad game. You let him drop 50. It was bad defense. But, it's slimy to take those shots at the end.
Yeah, I mean, me personally, I was always we lost or we won, dribble up the clock.
Yeah.
But we're seeing it. There's a lot of, if you watch the college basketball, that's happened like 45 times the last 2 days where everyone's just chucking up shots at the end of the game, just chuck up shots, which I'm not 100% a fan of. Like, if you're like realistically down, sure, but if you're down by 10 with like 12 seconds left, like, just dribble up the clock. Like, we don't need that. Like, we get it. You lost. Like, it's kind of selfish in a way, because I feel like you're just trying to put 3 more points on the board. But to get 50, I remember I was sitting there and I was like, I wasn't really mad about it because, you know, you don't get 50 every day. But like, it's one of those things where that's sort of like almost an exception. But at the same time, the same reaction is still warranted, where it's like, you don't do that, but at the same time, like, you're trying to get 50, like, that's pretty dope.
Yeah, and he's a young guy, you know, he hasn't hit that mark in his career. I can't do Jamal Murray, man. I think he's a dick.
He might be a dick. I mean, I like Jamal Murray just because I like the player. I like that Denver team. I was really high on Denver last year, and no one is giving Denver any credit now that they're actually doing things, which is actually kind of crazy.
Myself included. I very much so admit every time that I say that I think Denver can get knocked out in the first round, they play someone like the Clippers, I'm underrating them so bad. Like, or disrespecting is really what it is. Like, it's ridiculous. We just saw that Jokic game winner, which, by the way, the play right before, Luka Doncic was going off in that game. I don't know if you saw his post moves. He did that Mikhail up and under that was disgusting. Yeah, and then he had that poster at the very end. It reminded me of the DeMar DeRozan game winner poster on Detroit. I want to say it was last year.
Yes,
I know. Oh my God, dude! I got out of my seat. I was flexing. I'm like, God damn, dude! And then misses the free throw because he hit his rim terribly. Also, apparently, he's been a terrible free throw shooter over the last like week. And then Jokic comes, hits this crazy off balance game winner, but that's a Jokic shot. Like, he's just so goofy.
Yeah, Luka's kind of calmed down, which is where the Rookie of the Year race has picked back up between him and Trey, because Luka's kind of flattened out a bit. He came back to earth from his stellar, like, 2-month stretch. Yeah, but Denver, the one storyline, though, is Isaiah Thomas is making his return to the Garden. And they think it's going to be an actual tribute night, because the last time he was there, it was the Paul Pierce retirement night, which I was there for that, which was dope. So they didn't want to like steal Paul's thunder.
Yeah.
And but
so IT's out of the rotation officially, and
yes,
I know that, which is saddening because I love Isaiah Thomas. But you know what I don't? You know what I don't get? You know what I don't get? People on Twitter always bash Celtics fans for trading Isaiah Thomas like we had a say in the matter.
Yeah. And, I mean, look at it. Like, you're going to tell me that we should keep Isaiah Thomas over Kyrie Irving?
Yeah. Like, if we go back to the night of the trade, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. Because I'm pretty sure it was a week before we traded the number one pick to get Tatum.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there, and I just got back from work, and I was just chilling watching something happen. And my first reaction was, shit. Because I like Kyrie, obviously. I liked him because, you know, he's a popular player. But I really thought that their skills evened out. Or I thought that, you know, what Isaiah – I didn't think Kyrie was that great of a playmaker. Like, Isaiah wasn't that great of a playmaker. He'll give you 6 assists a game, which is what Kyrie was putting up in Cleveland. So I was like, you know, I really don't love the move, especially because I like Jay Crowder for the team. And I just thought it was a move where I'm like, well, we got like probably a top 10 player in the league, but at the same time, we gave up a top 15 and another valuable role player because Isaiah was a top 15 player at the time. I feel like after those 2 seasons, he had a boss and solidified himself as at least a top 20 player on the NBA.
Yeah, and then, I agree.
Yeah, and then, you know, the whole playoff run and his sister and whatever, like, it was like the whole city lost a family member. And you just watched him put up 50-plus on the Wizards.
Oh, that might be my favorite game.
That was the only game I've cried after the game was over.
Yeah, it was.
Where I just sat on the couch and just 2 tears just streamed down my face.
I just got the chills. Dude, when he fouled out Markieff Morris and got that and one... That was the peak.
I've never been screaming so hard on the inside, but so dead on the outside because I just couldn't move. Yeah. I just my jaw just dropped, and I wanted to scream yes, but it was just like that was unbelievable. Like I did not believe what I was seeing. That game was something that you only script for a movie. And that game could never happen again, but it just did. And we love Isaiah for that. What Danny did at the end of the day turned out to be a smart decision for, you know, how fallen off Isaiah really did have because of the hip. But I don't get the whole narrative that, like, Celtics fans are ungrateful because we traded Isaiah. Where a lot of people are like, wow, why did we do that?
Yeah, I mean, Cleveland doesn't get slandered for how they treated Isaiah. Neither does L.A., I mean, Denver fans have been great. When he checked in, he got a crazy ovation. But yeah. IT just tweeted something. It was either earlier today or yesterday that he's so excited to come back to Boston. He debated re-signing with us this offseason. And
I would have lost my shit.
Oh, so would I. I mean, my basketball mind, maybe not. But like emotionally, give me Isaiah. And the year after, I want Avery Bradley back on the team.
Avery Bradley.
Those are the guys. Dude, the picture of... After IT lost his sister, Avery.
Of them on the bench?
Yeah.
Oh,
the Tacoma boys.
Oh, my heartstrings.
Me too. Yeah, and like you said, Jay Crowder was the heart of the team. I mean, all of them. But like, it was reminiscing.
Yeah, in hindsight, obviously, if you look at the trade, it was like, ended up being like Kyrie Irving for like Larry Nance and Colin Sexton, which is kind of insane.
All for it.
But back to, you know, Isaiah's making his return. He has fallen out of the rotation, which I get why, but at the same time, like, just play him because he's dope. But, yeah, Denver's a tricky team because they have talent. And the way they play is different where it's almost like slow and fast at the same time. If you get what I'm talking about.
Yeah. It really depends on the lineup, it feels like. Like, pretty much if they have Monte Morris or if they have Jamal Murray in.
Yeah, and, like, they're one of those teams where it's like you never really know exactly which Like, they're going to have a really good offense, and they're going to have a really bad defense. You just don't know how they're going to put it, how they're going to give it to you. Where it's hard for a defense because, like you said, they'll have games where they're just running and running and running and running and running. And then they'll have games where just slow it up.
Yeah. Since I'm on an episode with you here, I'm dropping a hot take.
Okay.
I'm going that we beat this team by 15+, and IT gets minutes in garbage time, and the Garden goes crazy.
I'll one-up you. The starters will be out by the fourth quarter, and Isaiah plays the entire fourth quarter.
Oh, I hope they do it just for Isaiah.
You know Isaiah in the fourth quarter in the Garden, right?
Oh, it's true. Oh, man.
Let's just hope. I feel like that's more of a wet dream than actually a hot take.
Honestly, that's the only guy where I really would hope that, you know, we're blowing him out and then he comes in the fourth and just leads a crazy comeback.
I kind of hope we lose.
If it's an IT game winner, I think I'm good with it. Like Marcus Morris fouls out. I mean.
Oh, Marcus Morris fouls out on the elbow. Oh.
Yeah.
I would give my left kidney for that. But yeah, no, this team's weird. It's like the Denver is really weird because they haven't done shit like since the 90s.
Yeah.
And they haven't done anything. The last time they were relevant was with Carmelo Anthony in like 2010, and then they had that 1 year in 2013, and then they just went back to being bad, and they really haven't come out of the cellar since then. And they've been good enough to not really get a great pick, but they've been bad enough where, like, they don't do anything. So they've kind of been in NBA purgatory the last few years.
It's a big game. I think we really need this one.
I do, too. And I think, like, I feel like it's a doable win. I feel like it would be tougher if we're playing a Houston or if we were playing a Philadelphia or an Indiana. Because I just feel like no one respects this Denver team. That's just what it comes down to. No one respects Denver because what have you shown me? You show me that you're doing really good for this one season.
Yeah. Tommy Heinsohn was saying that he doesn't see the swagger in Denver. And I totally get that. Like, obviously Golden State has it because they're proven. They know that they're the shit. Like Denver, I don't think Denver's very confident in themselves either, really. I mean, when it comes down to a playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, can you just give it to Jokic 20 times and hope he get? I don't know. Because Jokic just offensively reminds me a lot of Al, where he's just a crafty guy. He'll take his jump shots, he'll get in the paint, and he's a really good passer. And then he's a really good rebounder as well, and he leads the break, but can you really give him the ball like you can a Karl Anthony Towns? Can you give him the ball like you can a Joel Embiid? Like a Shaq, like a KG, like a Keem? No. And then you look at their other players where guards are your main focus point. They don't have a Kyrie or a Curry or a Westbrook or a Harden or even a Chris Paul. They have Jamal Murray and Gary Harris, who are good players, but they're not – yo, game five, we need 20 points this quarter or we lose the series. Let's do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And their forte is really moving the ball, that they pass amazingly, that they'll get to open shooters. But when you play a crazy defense like Boston, are you going to be able to do that? You know, their last two games, Dallas, Minnesota, you can do whatever you want against those teams defensively or when you have the ball. It's going to be real different against this Boston team that is going to be crazy motivated. Like, I think Kyrie's going to have a game, especially after being pissed with that Jamal Murray thing.
If Kyrie doesn't have 75 by halftime, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, I totally get that. So, moving on from this game, I wanted to throw you a couple players or throw you a couple stats, and you take a guess at who you think is leading the team in that stat.
Okay.
We'll start with something a little easy here. What about usage rate?
Usage rate, I will have to go... I want to say Terry, because every time he touches the ball, it's either a turnover or a shot. But I'm going to go Kyrie.
It is Kyrie. Kyrie's sitting at 31. The closest is Tatum, 21%. And then you got Jalen right after him. A lot of the rest of the starting lineup's pretty close to him. Terry's not that crazy. I mean, he plays off ball a good amount. It's probably just, you know, when he touches. So they have assist to usage rate percentage. Terry is terrible. 38th percentile. For being a guard, too, it's like, yeah. And a terrible assist percentage in general. So, not surprising. But I'm glad that if Terry's usage rate was up there, this team would be so unbearable to watch at times.
Yeah.
So, next one I'm going to go with here. Effective field goal percentage.
Effective field goal percentage. So that takes into account three-pointers and regular field goals.
This is a little unexpected here. I'll give you that.
I want to say Marcus Morris.
It's not. It is the same guy that's leading in two-point percentage.
Al?
No, Robert Williams.
Hey!
Yes, 77%. And that's because he has not attempted a three.
Nice. So other than Robert Williams, who's second on the list other than Robert?
Second on the list is, we got lower level guys. We got like Wanamaker, Tice. But guys with real minutes is going to be Al Horford, like you called.
Hey.
Yeah, so that is definitely the way to go. And leading, see what we want to go with here. Who shoots the highest percentage of their shot as three-pointers?
Oh,
not percentage from three, but most of their shots are threes. Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm going to say Marcus Smart.
Wow, you got that one. Yeah. 59% of his shots are threes? That's crazy. 59% of his shots are threes.
Jeez Louise, man.
Terry's 49%.
Yeah, that's not surprising.
No, not at all.
And he shoots like 12%, so.
Yeah. And what's another one I want to throw at you here? And one percentage. Amount of times that they got fouled and made the shot, percentage-wise.
I'm going to go...
Oh, we got someone in the 98th percentile.
I'm going to go Jason Tatum.
Al Horford.
Al!
Jason Tatum's actually in the lower level there. Al is in the 98th percentile of bigs. 42% of the times he gets fouled, it's an and one.
Wow.
Damn.
Might be because he only shoots like twice a game. So like...
That's fair.
I don't really see it. Okay, I can see that though.
All right, let's try a worst here. Who do you think has the worst foul percentage? fair.
Worst, so they foul the most?
Yeah.
It has to be Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris is not bad, actually.
Really?
It says he's on the higher side here. And Marcus Smart, surprisingly, is not very good. I mean, I guess that makes sense with his intensity. He does foul a lot.
I feel like all his fouls are like cheap, like reach in fouls, like 36 feet away.
Worst one by far, the fourth percentile of this.
Asking Tice.
Daniel Tice. Yeah.
I love Tice.
Actually, my fault. I didn't see him at the bottom of the list. Second percentile, Yabusele.
Yikes.
All right. So anyways, aside from all these stats, actually, who do you think has the highest defensive rating?
Defensive rating. I feel like it's someone, it has to be, okay. With actual minutes, I feel like.
Yeah, right, actual now, minutes. I'm not going to do some.
Actual minutes. I so want it to be Aaron Baines, but it's so not Aaron Baines.
It is.
I feel like it's someone obscure. It's like not who I think it is. Or is it obvious?
It's fairly obvious.
Is it Al?
Hold on. Actually, you know, when I pulled this up earlier, I thought I knew the answer. I'm pulling it up again here. It's Aaron Baines. Only guy, actually Tice also, and like Shemmy, but those guys don't get crazy minutes. Actually, well, Tice, interestingly, him and Baines are both at 14 minutes, which is terrible, by the way. Pisses me off, kind of.
Tice's dick. That stat does not count.
Agreed. 98.9 defensive rating for Baines. Absolutely insane. Yeah. And then
that's what I like to hear.
I was really expecting Marcus to be up there. Marcus is the fourth worst.
Really?
Yeah. And the other Marcus is the worst.
Yeah. The advanced stats are weird. Because, like, obviously Marcus is one of the best defenders in the NBA.
Yeah.
But some Lakers fan is going to pull that out and be like, you're bad at this because defensive rating's bad.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out to PJ Dozier for that 50 defensive rating. And a 50 net rating. God. Needs more minutes.
Down. Michael Jordan who?
Yeah, exactly. Put him at the top of the list. All right. So, put out something on Twitter. I think we're going to try and do this once a week. Getting some questions from some of the fans, some of the listeners. Hashtag AskPulse. And we got one here from at Celtics_fan PG. Shout out to you for the generic name. No hate, all love. Why does Brad Stevens consistently let bad teams back into games? I think it's unfair to put it on Brad.
This is what I have to say about Brad. One, everybody on Twitter, there is less than a 0% chance that you know more about basketball than Brad Stevens. That's all I'm going to say. But here's why. Brad Stevens... The whole thing was Brad can't coach talent. Brad can't do this. Yeah. Sure. You know what? Sure. There are some coaches that just do better when there's less. But the one thing I did see, and you saw it at Gordon, Butler, have Gordon on the mind. And you see it with this, the teams he's coached. He lets his players play out of funks. The biggest thing is, why isn't Brad changing the lineup and why isn't Brad calling a timeout? Brad just lets the boys play. And if they are sucking, they're sucking. And if they're doing good, they're doing good. That's just Brad's style. He will stick to what he knows and he will just keep pressuring it until it works.
Yeah, I feel like you have to put it on the players.
Yeah, I mean, obviously if you're looking, there are some times when you're like, all right, Brad, call a timeout. There are some times where it's like, because a lot of the comebacks are just out of the second unit, which we mentioned, that ball stops when it's the second unit. It's not Brad's fault. He's definitely calling a play. It's not like Brad is like, hey, Terry, take this pull-up 32-footer with 18 seconds left. That's exactly what I want you to do.
The worst thing to watch.
If you look at Brad, he doesn't move, but you can see his arms sink when he does something bad, when he has them folded, which they're always folded.
Crosses them a little harder.
They go from like a 90 degree to like an 83 degree angle. But anyway.
Are you going to say in a timeout? Yeah. Hey, play defense. Like, no shit. I mean, the guys know what they need to fix.
I'm actually a big proponent of using timeouts as momentum stoppers. I think it works. If a team goes on like a 12-0 run, you call a timeout and you just freeze them for a minute and let everyone catch their breath. You can do it like that. But like I said, Brad just lets the boys play. He's like, if you guys can figure it out, then we're going to lose. And I feel like that's the pressure he puts on his players.
Yeah.
Which is, during the NBA, they can handle that type of pressure.
So the one other question we got here is from @Nets_Pulse. Check out his podcast, part of our network. Are you guys going to be in a position where you can rest guys on the second half of back-to-backs down the stretch? Like, say, one on March 30th, asking for a friend. Obviously, we're playing the Nets that day.
I wonder who we're playing.
So, there was a quote by Jay King, a tweet, saying that Brad Stevens already has games planned, about four of them, where Al is going to be resting for the rest of the season. I would guess that is possibly one of them, probably, where second game of back-to-backs, Al, and probably really just Al, maybe Gordon, but I don't think so. I think he needs to get into a rhythm a little. Al will probably be on the bench, get a couple do not plays. What's the term they're using now?
Load management.
Yeah.
Load management.
Just say rest.
If you look at their April, and their April is extremely easy. They're five games in April. They have the Heat twice, the Magic, the Wizards, and the Pacers. Even though I just said easy, we've actually struggled with basically every team on that list. But I feel like the Heat and the Magic should be automatic wins. And it doesn't really matter who. And you have the Pacers who are playing still extremely well, you know, despite the fact that Victor Oladipo's leg is in half. We also have the Wizards who've been a shit show all year. We only have a few more games left, actually.
Shout out to the Magic for beating us twice this year, though.
Yeah, we only have 12 games left. So we have Nuggets and then the Sixers next week, along with the Hornets, which should be a good win. The Spurs have an awful record on the road, and we're playing them, and we're at home. Then we have the Cavaliers, the Pacers, the Nets, the Heat, and then the rest of the games I just mentioned. So we realistically should only lose about, you know, if I want to be generous, 2 to 3 games in these last 12. We should go 9-3 at the minimum, go down the stretch, which, if I'm doing my math correctly, would put us at 52 wins.
Yeah. And, you know, playing our best ball going into playoffs, which is really what matters. Kind of hoping for that 4 seed.
Yeah,
I'd rather see Milwaukee second round than Toronto, personally.
What did I say the other night?
Just pure matchup. Toronto has the depth with us. I know Milwaukee's a deep team, but I don't think that it's really playoff depth, all of it, necessarily. I think that they do have some guys off the bench, obviously, that are going to give them good minutes, but I don't know, man. I'm not sure about Giannis being a closer yet still.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like... Well, they also had added a good amount of good pieces, Mirotić and Gasol, and a couple other guys they have that could space the floor, Lopez playing well, and Middleton obviously being a Celtic killer of sorts. Then you have Toronto, who do you trust Kyle Lowry to actually, that he gets to play in June? Or May?
That's fair.
Do you trust Kyle Lowry to not take an early vacation as he's done every year? It seems.
I'm just more worried about Kawhi Leonard than Giannis. Marcus can guard seemingly everybody in the league. Kawhi is one of the ones he can't.
The Pacers right now have a tough stretch ahead of them. So it's not out of the realm of saying, yeah, we have that kind of, we can get the 4 seed. They play the Nuggets tonight at 9, my time. And they have the Trailblazers and the Clippers and the Warriors in 4 nights. Back to back to back. Then the Nuggets again. The Thunder and then us. And then us again later on.
Man.
Plus the Nets and the Pistons, who are 2 playoff bound teams. And the Magic, who can sneak a win against, it seems, everybody. So they're having a very tough stretch. You look at the 76ers, they have almost an easier schedule than we do. But they play the Bucks twice and then us in the next 12 games.
Yeah.
And look at the Raptors. They play the Thunder twice on the 20th and the 22nd. And then they have teams. Yeah, then they have like the Heat, the Knicks twice, the Nets, the Bulls twice. So they have a wicked easy schedule as well. And then finally Milwaukee, which basically we are not catching Milwaukee. They have the Cavs twice, the Lakers, the Sixers tomorrow, the Rockets still, which will be a good game, and the Thunder to close it out, as well as 2 with Brooklyn. So we can realistically get 4, and if Philadelphia takes a little bit of a skid, we could realistically get 3.
Yeah, it's definitely, like I said, I mean, if we're playing our best basketball going into playoffs, I think that we make the Eastern Conference Finals and give the Warriors a good run. So that's really all I'm hoping for. And it looks like we're playing it right now. Just got to keep this up. And really, I hope Gordon can get into a rhythm. I think he's the X factor.
He has been in a kind of a rhythm. Other than tonight, where he only played a minute because he got bonked on the noggin. Yeah. He's been. Hey, watch out. Gordon game coming.
Hopefully. So, running a little over an hour here. We got to close the same way we always do with you. What's the scorching hot take from Cody this time?
What was my hot take last time?
You were scared to give a hot take.
Yes, I was scared to give a hot take because the last two hot takes, four hot takes I've had, have been atrociously.
You got to keep track of these. I'll write this one down.
All right, my hot take is that the Sixers hit a skid late in the season, and the Celtics get the 3 seed, matching them against the Detroit Pistons in the playoff. The Brooklyn Nets in the first round of the playoff.
All right. We're going to do this the same way that TNT does it. We're going to start keeping track of these and coming back to them. I'm going to get a little couple post-it notes going on. I said earlier, my hot take I got is that we see some garbage time IT minutes with the Celtics obviously winning this game coming up on Monday.
Like they have to play him. I think that even if he's out of the rotation, they have to play him for at least like 2 minutes.
Yeah. I'm going to be so upset IT doesn't see the floor.
Like, if it's a close game, they'll probably throw him in, like, the second quarter.
Yeah. Hopefully. And he'll ball out.
Yeah.
All
he
for
won't.
It.
He won't miss a shot. He'll shoot from fucking Tommy's lap.
Exactly. And Tommy will love it. The little guy.
The little guy.
All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of Celtics Pulse. Thank you for listening, guys. Going to upload these a little more regularly. You will hear from us soon.